This is the second in a series called The Kaleidoscope in your hymn book. Yesterday we were talking about plain song hymns, and we talked about the setting where you find these hymns in the monasteries, in the cathedrals, and how that influenced the kind of sound, the mystery, the quiet, perhaps the darkness or the little slits of light that came through. We talked about the Latin language that flows on vowels and has rather short sentences. We talked about the unchanging ritual that the monks in the monasteries would be in community and within the course of a week's time or so would have sung the entire Psalter and much of the rest of the scriptures, and the very complex melodies that developed, and that in their community, since they did them so often and they did them together, that they evolved this oral tradition of very intricate singing of chant, and what that means for us today in the church trying to do those same things. Now tonight we're going to talk about historically the next category of tunes, and we're going to sort of compare them in thought to these. Now the plain song hymns we're talking about since the very early church up to maybe 1400, along in there, the 15th century. Around this time, between then and say the 16th century, what was going on politically in the world? Or in terms of theology, in terms of
Reformation.
The Reformation, yeah. Very, very important. Over here, we're still in the Middle Ages, the Reformation. Okay, what tremendously important invention happened about this time? The printing press. I find that is just tremendously important in getting the Bible out to people. Also very, very important in music because it made a means for printing music. Before the time of the printing press, the composer and the conductor, the singer, was all the same person, and there wasn't really any way that I, as a composer, could have my music played in New York. I mean, if there was a composer in New York, and he did his music there, but I only did my music here. So the printing press made it possible for a composer to compose his music in one place and have it done in another place that he had never been and never met those people before. But that also had an important influence on the kinds of melodies, and that's what we're going to discover tonight. Okay, now, Reformation. What was a big issue, language-wise, in the Reformation?
The language of the people.
The language of the people, yes. And immediately, Luther and Calvin and the other reformers had a tremendous translation problem on their hands. And they really went at the Psalms immediately, and the Psalms then became the first body of songs. And it's this body of music, the Psalms, then, that we're going to explore tonight. Now, the monastery and the cathedral, what can you imagine in terms of the Reformation? What sorts of places would this be happening? Be great throngs of people at first, little groups of people. Maybe they're like a new splinter church. Maybe they met at somebody's home or maybe in a small room somewhere. Have any of you traveled in Europe, say particularly in Holland, where the Reformed Church is, and you have the tremendous big churches, and how much of those churches do they use now? Do you ever noodle around in there? Well, you know, they have maybe a big cruciform church, you know, like this. And some of the ones I've been in, I mean, like they have gates across here, a gate across here, and they use this for all sort of storage. And the people that would sit here. So they really used just a very small space out of this great big place. They didn't need it. They didn't need it. It was a new church, growing church, and it was just teeny tiny. So these kinds of ethereal, mysterious, far-off sounds didn't have any place here. We're talking about people of fire with a new kind of understanding of the faith, and it's in their own language. And they're so this timelessness, be off with that. Okay, now the melody. And this is the really interesting thing, is that if we're going to have everybody singing, and we got to get this stuff out fast because it's really new, and it's in our own language now, and nothing like that has ever happened before, so we're using this printing, what do you think happens to these complex melodies? Become much more simple, yes. Okay. Now, the other thing we talked about in terms of these melodies is when we sing them today, when they have their most to say, we sort of recapture this timeless quality. Breathing is not really a chore because we all kind of sense it together, and we breathe and we go on when it feels right. Okay? Turn to hymn 245. It's a tune you all know. Sung it since you were little children a bit. Okay, could we sing this through just to kind of get warmed up here? Okay, ready, go. Now, how would that tune have sounded to these folks in the 16th century? First off, how would it have looked to them? Just happened to happen. Okay, that's what they saw. But this isn't what they saw in church. Because in church, they always sang only in unison. Never was there part singing in church. Furthermore, never was the singing accompanied by the organ or by anything. Okay? And in some of those Dutch churches, you know, they have tremendous, beautiful, beautiful organs. And it's hard to believe that they never used those in worship. But the town would hire the organist, not the church. The town would hire the organist to play recitals, not to lead the worship. And so, for instance, in Haarlem, Holland, this is one of the very most famous organs. And on the top of it is there are two lions, and it's the crest of the city. It has nothing to do with the church at all. It was the city's instrument. And the organist was hired to entertain the city with recitals and things, not to lead worship. Okay, but psalm singing was done in parts in people's homes or for entertainment on Friday night or someplace, but not in church. So we do have part singing. But now notice, although these notes look pretty strange, you see, here's the tune right here. Da, 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 da. But look what voice is singing it. The tenor. And I find this is one of the most interesting things. And this comes from the French Psalter, whether we're talking about the French Psalter, the German Psalters, the English Psalters, or the Bass Psalm Book in our own country, the tradition at this time in part singing was that the melody was always sung by the tenor voice, not by the sopranos. And it's sort of an interesting story in a whole different course to find out how that happened and when it happened. But I just pointed out to you just now. What do I still have here? In any case, this sort of notation now is a great advance over what the monks saw in the monasteries. They would have one book, and the book might be huge, this big on each, or maybe so big on each page and about as tall as a person. And they have a great huge pedestal for this book to sit on. And then all the monks or all the choir would gather around this one book and read it. Oh. But now we have printing, so we can get this stuff out for folks. We get book size, and notice they don't print the parts like we see them in our hymn book, but each part printed by itself. Okay? Now we also have notes, long and short notes, and we're developing a kind of rhythm. Okay. Oh. In the plain song tradition, the rhythm that evolved had nothing to do with a beat at all, and had everything to do with the rhythm of the words. And if it would go in threes and twos and kind of just flow along, had nothing at all to do with beats. In these translations of the Psalter, both the French and the German, the Psalms were set in poetic form. And then the musical meters began to have a say. I'd like to play a little game with you here, with this tune, so we can sort of experience this. I'd like you we'll just read the words together in the rhythm, da-dum, 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 da-dum. Okay? Now, forget that the rhythm you see there at all. Okay, we're going to go, all people that on earth do dwell, sing to the Lord with cheerful voice. Him serve with mirth, his praise forth tell. Come ye before him and rejoice. Okay? Let's sing it that way. What does that feel like to you, besides a little bit strange? What does it remind you of? Marching or dancing? Okay. What happens to the words when we do this? Let's do it without the piano, because then you can tell even better. Then we'll do it like they did. Let's do it the same way without the piano. Okay, ready, sing.
All people that on earth do dwell, sing to the Lord with cheerful voice. His serve with mirth, his praise forth tell. Come ye before him and rejoice.
What does it do to the feeling about it? Is it lighter or heavier? Lighter. It's lighter, isn't it? Yeah. Okay, let's do something really crazy. This doesn't work, but it might with a different psalm. And do that rhythm backwards. And it'll be like,
all people that on earth do dwell.
Okay? And we'll keep going on that. You have to really kind of concentrate on that a little because it doesn't fit so good. Okay, ready, sing.
All people that on earth do dwell, sing to the Lord with cheerful voice. Him serve with his praise forth tell. Come ye before him and rejoice.
What does this do to the words? Pardon?
To me, you lose sight of the words.
In a sense, you lose sight of the words. But when we did it the other way, when we sing, come ye before him and rejoice, I think that was a little, this is so artificial that it makes it, I think you're right. But when you did it the other way, come ye before him and rejoice, it has a lilt about it, and it kind of sings to that word rejoice, doesn't it? Okay, let's try one. That probably will suit the words better, but it'll be even a little bit harder. We're going to mix those threes and twos. Okay, it's going to go like this.
All people that on earth do dwell, sing to the Lord with cheerful voice.
Okay, try it that way. You got to sit tall. Okay, and if we make a mistake, it doesn't matter, does it? We're just trying out stuff. Ready, go.
All people...
Oh, I messed up right there, didn't I? No, see, I've done one, you can do one too. Ready, go.
All people that on earth do dwell, sing to the Lord with cheerful voice. Him serve with mirth, his praise forth tell. Come ye before him and rejoice.
Yeah. Have the sense of dancing about it? Dancing was really in at this time. Not in the church, of course. Especially not in Calvin churches. But folk dancing and the dance rhythms, the composers of this music, they knew those dances. And they had that in mind. And the French Psalter then, after it was translated into these poetic psalms, for the 150 psalms, there were 110 meters. of various kinds. And you'd say, okay, if this song went ta-da, 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 the rhythm of the words, then you'd sing it with a tune that went ta-da, 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 ta-da. And if the words fit a rhythm that went da-da, 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 then you did that, and you sort of plugged them in that way. And in fact, I have a Scotch Psalter at home, it's not an old one, where the hymnal itself, the Psalter part, which is in the beginning, the pages are torn in half. I mean, they're cut in half. So you have the psalm down below and the tunes up above. So you can, you know, turn to whatever tune you want for whatever psalm you want. And you can use them rather interchangeably according to the meter. Okay, and they were especially fond of this changing of the threes and twos, and it kind of kept things really, really light and buoyant, and rather, I think, reminded them of dancing. Okay, now, I'd like to look at... Now, one other thing with Old Hundredth. So that was how the French might have done it. I don't know French, so I can't tell you precisely how the French language would fit with that particular tune. But the English, on the other hand, were much fond of a form called the English ballad that had a certain kind of flow about it, had a certain meter, and nearly all of the English psalms went in the same meter. They weren't so changeable as the French. And this same tune in English, it is much much straighter, not so rhythmic. You need a bigger table. But the interesting thing is the tune is still in the tenor. There it is. And this is a setting of the same tune by the composer John Dowland. John Dowland was a lute player, very, very famous lute player and singer, and he has written many, many songs. And he took the Old Hundredth Psalm tune and made a setting of it for four parts. And here's the tune right down here in the tenor. And but it's in this same straight rhythm that we have here in our hymnal, isn't it? Okay, so the English tradition was different than the tradition on the continent. Okay, we'll come back to the English tradition for now, but I just wanted to show you that because it's the same tune. This tune was a French tune, but taken over in the English Psalter as well. Probably weren't too many tunes that did that. Okay. Now let's look at hymn number 29. This is one of my favorite tunes in this book, and I didn't grow up in the Lutheran church, and I never knew any of these tunes when I was a kid, and it's really been my delight to get acquainted with them, and I know they're sort of formidable, but I think they're really worth the effort, and that's why I enjoy doing this sort of thing. How many of you know this tune? You sing it in your parishes in Advent? Okay. Okay, I'm not even going to do it with the piano, because that would be heresy. I wouldn't do it that way. Okay, this comes from the Geneva Psalter, this first translation then of the French Psalms into the Psalter. But this text is not a psalm text, obviously, is it? So it's a different text than the composer originally had in mind. Okay. Maybe go a little lower, maybe. Okay. But like this. Comfort, comfort now, my people. Tell of peace, so says our God. Okay, here we go. Ready? Go.
Comfort, comfort now, my people. Tell of peace, so says our God. Comfort those who sit in darkness, mourning under sorrow's load. To God's people now proclaim that God's pardon waits for them. Tell them that their war is over. God will reign in peace forever.
Okay, how can we get to going a little faster? One thing is, if you're not really very familiar with the tune, it's hard. But given, say, if you're familiar with a tune, and in terms of just how we sing a tune, how can we make it go faster? By singing it how? Louder?
Lighter.
Lighter, yes. Okay, let's try that. And we're not going to go faster than we were, but just to see if we can get you all on so you feel reasonably comfortable with it, okay? You've got to sit tall. You can't just go to sleep in the pew, can you? I think a lot of people on Sunday morning want to do that. They don't really want to be bothered by the liturgy too much and the hymns, either one. And doing this sort of thing, maybe it bothers you. But at any rate, I think it's worth it because then the text can speak. Okay, let's try it and kind of sit up and sing lightly so that we can kind of keep the tempo on. Ready, go.
Comfort, comfort now, my people, tell of peace, so says our God. Comfort those who sit in darkness, mourning under sorrow's load. To God's people now proclaim that God's pardon waits for them. Tell them that their war is over, God will reign in peace forever.
What can you tell me about breathing when we sing this way? Is it particular how and when we breathe, or doesn't matter? It's very particular, isn't it? And it demands that we be ready to do it, because if we don't, the tune's going to let us go by. Plainsong hymns don't do that. It just waits till everybody's ready. But if we keep in mind that these are like dance tunes, and people are dancing, you can't stop the beat. It just goes right on, and that's part of the fun of this tune. So in plainsong, we found that the word is the master of the tune. In the Psalter tunes, and particularly in the French and the German, we find that the tune is sort of the master of the text. It says, we're going at this speed, and we're not going to stop till we get there. And if you want to breathe, you've got to be quick about it, just like when you're dancing. Just like when you're dancing. Now, what happens when we do, in fact, do that? Alice Parker, who has written this little book called Creative Hymn Singing, and whom I had the really great, great privilege to work with maybe 12 years ago, a long time ago, has written this little book. And she had had done arranging for the Robert Shaw Chorale. And she, in her summer home, somewhere out in, I can't remember if it was in Pennsylvania or New Jersey or someplace out there, had a summer home that was close to a Mennonite community, and she used to sit on her front porch and listen to the Mennonites sing. And Mennonites, of course, sing with no accompaniment ever. And they sing wonderfully in four parts, like since birth. And she was very much moved by their singing, very much moved by the melodies. And so she started digging into melodies, and her kind of basic philosophy is that if the tune, not even considering the text, if the tune doesn't speak the way it was intended at the time it was written, then probably the text will likewise just kind of wither away and not really have anything to say. And likewise, if the tune is brought alive in its original style, the text speaks in a really special way. And how many times have people in the church criticized, oh, you know, those old hymns, they are so boring, they just don't say anything at all anymore, let's get rid of those things. And I would suggest that the reason they don't say anything is because we try to make all hymns sound like the wonderful Victorian hymns that were written in the late 1880s to the early 1900s. But if we take a folk hymn and make it sound like that, if we take a Psalter hymn and make it sound like that, or if we take a plain song hymn and make it fit into the mold of SATB chords, change the chord on every beat, nice pretty harmonies, it destroys the tune. And I think that's largely what had happened in the church. And I think this hymn book, and there's a new Episcopal hymn book coming out, and I think it will take up all the new hymn books, are really picking up on, in their accompaniments, the styles that were inherent in the tunes originally. So the good news, I think, in the terms of these Psalter hymns is you don't have to do them SATB. You don't have to do them with any organ at all. It would be far better if they were. Unaccompanied. When we sang this last week, and I played it because the people didn't know the hymn very well, and I played it, and then we did it without the accompaniment, and the first thing that someone said was, oh, it was so much easier without the piano. And another person said, you know, I always hated that hymn until now, because they had never really felt it dance before. But this hymn you can do without the organ, and the easiest way to teach it is to just sing it. Let's look at another one, and then we'll jump over to the German tradition and the English and our own tradition. I would also say, in regard to this, when I was last night, when I was thinking about what I was be doing today, and I think, oh, everybody else has things that are in keeping with his remembrance today, and here we are going to be bouncing around doing Psalter tunes. That it doesn't really fit. And then this morning in the Bible study, we were talking in Isaiah there, and there was the chapter, "Comfort, comfort ye my people." And I said, wow, that's kind of neat. And this next tune we're going to look at, which is 493, came into my mind too. And out of the same tradition, I think really a hymn for us today on this day in this place. Now this is a tune that is new to this hymnal, probably new to the Lutheran tradition. It's very new to me yet. I haven't even done it very much in my parish. It's the same kind of style though, not quite so dancey, but rhythmically very precise, and it demands that we really go right along with it or we kind of lose everything. But I'll play this time because I'm about 98% sure that you probably don't know it either. Okay, let's just try a little bit here. Okay, maybe just sing, not the words, but let's just sing on do-do-do. Let's kind of pretend that we are recorders. Okay, do-do-do-do. Okay, just nice little do's. Here we go. Ready, go. It could be really quite a heavy tune, couldn't it, if we really go, and you're like, hope of the world, oh Christ, and really get kind of heavy about it, but let's not. See, our 20th century years might take us that way, but 16th century years wouldn't. Okay, so let's kind of put on our 16th century ears and sing like recorders. Okay, so we're not going to go, hope of the world, but more, hope of the world. Not so loud and lighter. And you gotta sit real tall, take a deep breath, ready, sing.
Hope of the world, oh Christ of great compassion.
Okay, let's do that again. And remember, let's go on here. We said about the Latin language floats along on the vowels. These hymns kind of get their spunk from the consonants, don't they? So let's really hope of the world, thou Christ of great compassion. Got to really work on the consonants. Still nice. It's getting nice and light, though, okay? Here we go. Ready, go.
Hope of the world, thou Christ of great compassion, speak to our fearful hearts by conflict rent. Save us, thy people.
That wasn't too hard, was it? You did really well. Good. I'll take you home to my parish. Now, I have here, this is how the folks would have sung this tune. But Gudamel himself wrote a four-part version. Always get going backwards on these things. And even without looking, where are we going to find the tune? Where are we going to find the tune?
Tenor.
In the tenor, yeah, there it is again. Here they put CF here. That's sort of an abbreviation for the words cantus firmus, which back in the old Latin tradition meant the tune. Okay, so here's the tune down in the tenor voice, and the other part's doing something else. Let me just play this for you. I know. No, when did you come and sing? Okay. And maybe, can you ladies even sing down low, just you know, really lightly? It might get down too low there. We're going to sing down here.
It's a little hard to see.
Is it? Well, you can leave, what you can do is leave the light on and they can just read it out of the hymn book.
Okay.
That is stanza two. Sound sense, doesn't it? Isn't that kind of a...
You
could just sing out of the hymnal.
No, but we're not singing that.
Though. I'm playing.
Okay, we don't...
You can just sing the melody.
You're just singing the tune. If we were a whole choir, just the tenors would be singing that. The sopranos would be singing this part here, the altos here, and the bass is here, and I wouldn't be playing at all. Okay? But just to kind of give us a little flavor of the sound without... I don't think we can handle the SATB reading thing without the piano. But just to give us a little flavor of the sound here, if you all just sing the tune down the line so you can sort of hear what that tune is like down there, and then the sense of what Gudimill himself would have heard with his client. Okay? Just try it again. So we're way down low there, and we're on the second verse, and you can just sing it right out of your hymn book. Ready? Go. One thing that's really fun to do in your congregations is, actually I took this from a choir anthem, but it's actually what Gudimill himself wrote, is to have your choir sing this version, and the congregation sing the tune on the other verses, and it kind of recreates then what Gudimill himself heard. And I promise you, if you go to that trouble, you'll get a really wonderful surprise in what comes back. And I think this is a really wonderful tune and probably will never make the top 10 in the LBW. And I won't say whether it should or not, but I think it's really worth delving into. Okay. Here's one I'll bet you know. Let's look at 464. Here's what the folks back then would have seen. Okay, this is the French tune.
It's upside down the other hand.
You're right. But this is a page out of a book, out of a Psalter book. Not for singing at church, because why wouldn't they have done it at church? Because we didn't do harmony in church. We only sang the tune at church. But these we might have done at home for fun or at the tavern on Friday night or something, I don't know. But in any case, half of it's upside down. Why do you think that might have been? No. You can set it on the table and two people can sit over here and two people can sit over here. Yeah? It's the same thing, right. Only, notice, you can just almost see it. I don't know if I could focus it better or not. Probably not. In any case, here's the treble and here's the bass. And then over here we have what it says. Let me turn it over, because that's the part we really want to see, actually. Now here we have the church part, and this is the tenor, the church part and the tenor, and here's the contra, which is the alto. Okay, and here's the tune, the church part, but it's in the tenor voice, isn't it? Okay, so we're talking about tune number 5, the French tune, and then, so that's the tenor and the alto part called a contra. And then here's the treble part with the soprano, and then the bass part here. Again, they don't ever line the tunes upright, but you could sit at the table and sing these through. Okay, now. Let's see, where's my book? Can you have a book back, please? Okay, now this one comes from the Edinburgh Psalter, a Scotch Psalter. Okay, singing the tune.
Ready, go.
The lilt is, isn't it? Okay, why is that so? Why did the French and the Germans get so caught up in the lilt and the English not?
The dance.
Pardon?
The English.
Yeah, that's right. The English were, the French and the Germans were into this dance thing, and remember we had 150 psalms, and in the French Psalter they had 110 meters, so it could match all these things up. In England, though, instead of being so heavily influenced by the dance, they were much more influenced by the English ballad meter from the poetry. And the English ballad meter, notice at the bottom, right at the very corner of the page, it says Dundee, and then underneath it says CM. Well, CM stands for common meter, and the common meter was the English ballad meter. Okay, and that what that means is the common meter is otherwise known as 8-6-8-6. And if you notice on the first line, you are the way through, you alone, 8, can we the Father find, 6. And so if you go through there, each verse then goes 8 syllables, 6, 8, 6. And this was the rhythm of the English ballad. And it's otherwise known as common meter. And much, much, much of all of the English, Scotch, all of those psalters, if the tunes aren't in long meter, they might be in the short meter, or what's the other one then?
The long, short, common, and the double meters.
But even out of those four, still the most common of all is common meter. Now you might say, why do we do this? Remember what I told you about that French Psalter I had? Because they would write a sort of like a basic tune. And then the psalms were all set in maybe 3 or 4 meters instead of 110. And so they could just switch tunes. Let's say, okay, this psalm goes in common meter, so we can do this tune or that tune or the other tune. And so that the tune wasn't too offensive to the words, they were pretty straight. So that if you're singing revealed or... can't find the one that goes the other way. True wisdom. It didn't matter what the rhythm of the words were because it wasn't going to be mixed up in the tune rhythm. It would fit with any of them. Okay? So we find in the English, this is the style it took. Okay, and this is the way they might have sung it at home, but not at church. But not at church. Still just the tune. Okay. Lastly, let's look at let's see if we can do two more. Let's look at our good friend. Oh God, our help me just passed. It's the same. I forgot the name right now. Yep, 320. Perhaps some of you remember back in the service book and hymnal, there were two versions of this, and one of them had the tune in the tenor. Yeah? Did you ever do that? And maybe your organist just played the one with the tune in the tenor? In this one, they didn't do that. They just left it with the tune in the soprano. But notice again, this one's a little bit later than some of the other, in common meter. So that means we could take the text from 264 and we could sing that to this tune if we wanted to, or we could sing these words to that tune if we wanted to. Always interchangeable. Okay? Let's just sing the first verse. Okay, ready? Sing. singing these at home again, I hope you'll, when you say, oh, this one, it feels so nice, it feels like we're home again, and then when you get back into these dancy ones, you say, oh, gosh, these things are so hard and they feel so uncomfortable. Remember how it was back in the 16th century that we were talking about English poems and how that affected how they are. And then we're talking about the French and the German and how they influenced. Let's look at one German one to end, 253. It won't sound very different to you from the French ones. In fact, for a long time until I really looked it up, I thought it was a French one, but it's not. Okay, this is one of my real favorite ones. And this is one of those that mixes up, it goes frontwards and backwards. So we're going to go, Lord Jesus Christ, be present now, and our hearts in true devotion bow. Okay, let's try a little bit. Let's sing undo once till you get the tune. Da, ready, do, sing. Do, 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 do. So you can't even tap your toe on it, can you? Because your toe will get lost. So we're going 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, one swing, did they? This one swings, I think. Let's try it with the words. Okay. Really light. Ready, go.
Lord Jesus Christ, be present now. Our hearts in true devotion bow. Your Spirit sent with light divine, and let your truth within us shine.
Yeah, it's lightness, isn't it? It's happy. It's not heavy. It's not boring. It's not any of those things. And you could do it without the organ. And the more you do them with the organ, the slower they go, the longer they get, the louder they get. And pretty soon, it's a boring tune that we wish we never had to look at. But we'll see tomorrow. I'm going to look at, I'm going to do 2 days on German chorales, and we're going to talk about quite different traditions and quite different time frames. But what we'll see tomorrow, in the earliest of the German chorale tunes, much of the same kind of flavor. And I hope you all come back tomorrow. I think we're going to clear off, well, maybe if you have a couple of questions, and I think maybe we'll clear off because I'll probably be flooding in here for Vespers. And so. Well, in the first place, I would only maybe do it on one hymn in a service. I wouldn't do it on all of them for sure. And over a period of time, I've kind of done it. I would do it before the service. And just sing it to them. I think the best thing, if your congregation has never sung this tune, maybe it's better that they never have, because then they don't have any kind of notion about it at all, is to just get out from behind the organ and come down and stand in front of them and say, okay, folks, this is the way it goes. Lord Jesus Christ, be present now. Sing it back to me. Lord Jesus Christ, be present now. And if it didn't come back just the way I want to say, oh, come on, y'all, I think, you know, sit up tall and take a breath and let's try it again. Okay? That's what you do when you teach anywhere else, isn't it? It's okay. I wouldn't do that during worship. But to get it going, and then we'd probably do it that way. I might have the choir do one verse that way. Maybe I'd say, well, this tune's kind of hard, and I'd really like my parish to be able to do it, but the reality is they probably won't. Okay, but my choir will do it, and I would maybe have the choir do one verse that way just to set the flavor of it. And then I'd play the rest of it and do the best I could to keep it moving nice. If it was a really gung-ho day, I might just let them do the whole thing without the organ or a different style hymn or use a flute with it. Or if I could gather together a recorder quartet and let them play it, now that would be really fun and really set the mood. I have truly found in my own parish and in some places that I visited that this sort of thing, the people are appreciative And it usually really lightens the mood of the day. And people will say to me after, I never heard this tune this way before, or that was a really neat tune, or the words really came out in a way I've never heard them before. And even if I never did that again with that tune, those people will always have that image in their ear, and it won't be just another tune in the book. And with American folk tunes, which I'll do later in the week, the same thing. Get them singing in rounds, get the men improvising an accompaniment underneath it. You've got to be kind of quick about it. You can't take 15 minutes with it, but it takes a long time. And I really have found people receptive. I really have. Thank you all for coming.